Hi there, this is Darren Spoo, pastor at First Baptist Church in Tulsa, and welcome to our weekly message podcast. We would invite you to join us in person Sunday morning at 8:30 and 11 o'clock in downtown Tulsa, or check out our webpage at tulsafbc.org. God bless you, and have a great week. Most of you, I'm sure, know how to ride a bicycle. And many of you, I'm sure, have had to teach somebody else how to ride a bicycle. Now, both are very challenging, and they present challenges of their own. And I wonder if I were to ask you, which did you find more difficult, learning how to ride a bicycle or teaching somebody how to ride a bicycle? Your answers would probably be all over the board. For instance, I remember a bloody knee on a caliche dirt driveway where I learned how to ride my bicycle and how difficult it was to learn. But I also remember being incredibly humbled when I tried to teach my own children how to ride a bicycle. And for moms and dads, some of you are flashing right now back to those days when you were teaching your kids to ride a bicycle, because how do you teach somebody to do something? How do you explain something that you only really know by experience? How do you ride a bicycle? You just ride a bicycle. So what I did with my own kids is I tried to break it down, not into steps, but I broke it down into essential elements. That if there's a couple of things you need to master in order to ride a bicycle, here's what they are. And by the way, my wife created a very, very fun scrapbook page on this. I taught my kids three things: look up, balance, pedal, pedal, pedal. Now think about those three things in terms of riding a bicycle. We're tempted to always be looking down here, right? Looking at your hands and your feet. You don't need to look down here. You need to look up at where you're going and where you don't want to go. Balance. You can kind of feel it in your core. You can feel it in the tires, whether or not you're on balance or not. And then pedal, pedal, pedal. Because new bike riders are scared, they want to go really slow, right? They don't want to go too fast and lose control. But actually, motion, momentum is your friend. I don't care how good you are at balancing, but if you're still on a bicycle, you will fall over. And so that momentum keeps you moving forward and keeps you balanced. Look up, balance, pedal, pedal, pedal. And I had no idea about this as a young father, but the more those words have stuck in my mind over the years, I see those as pretty good essential elements on how to live life. Look up. What does the Bible say? Don't set your mind and heart on earthly things. Set your mind and heart on heavenly things. We need to look up. Have you ever just looked around lately and noticed how many people are looking down? Figuratively, sometimes we're just looking down and we're distracted by the things right in front of us, but many times just look around you and you'll see how many people are looking down at a device. Look up. Pay attention. As followers of Jesus, we should be trying to really pay attention to what exactly is God doing in our world. Look up. Balance. What does Ephesians 5 say? Live life then with a due sense of responsibility. Not as those who do not know the meaning of life, but as those who do. We are to live our life with a sense of balance, that we understand what the meaning of life is and we live according to that. Look up, balance, pedal, pedal, pedal. Jesus says, follow me. When Jesus invites us to be his disciples, he doesn't invite us to sit still. He invites us to join him in the adventure of seeing God's kingdom come into our world. Look up, balance, pedal, pedal, pedal. Well, we're getting to that place in the life of Jesus and the ministry of Jesus. And we're in the Gospel of Luke, where Jesus is choosing his disciples. He's inviting people to do just that, to follow him. And what Luke does is he uses Peter, who was the leader of the disciples, as the example. Okay, he tells Peter's story first because it tells us so much about what it means to choose to follow Jesus, what it means for Jesus to choose us to follow him. And it could be, and following Jesus is very challenging. For those of us who have experienced it for a while, it's hard to explain. But it could be that we could break following Jesus down into some very essential elements. We're going to look at those today. Before we jump into Luke chapter 5, I just want to share a quote by Howard Hendricks, theologian at Dallas Theological, DTS, the Dallas Theological Seminary. He said, we can influence people at a distance. Excuse me, I got that quote wrong. Let me start over. Even I make mistakes. He says this, we can impress people at a distance, but we can only influence people up close. Don't you find that to be true? We can impress people at a distance, but we can only really influence people up close. And so we live in a day where everything is defined by distance. Distance learning, social distance, right? I think both of those phrases are somewhat oxymoronical, right? Jesus doesn't invite us to keep him at a distance. He can impress us at a distance, but he can influence us only as we get up close to him. So let's look at Luke chapter 5, and I'm going to start in verse 1. One day as Jesus was standing by the Lake of Gennesaret, it's the same as the Sea of Galilee. That was another phrase for that place. So the Sea of Galilee, the people were crowding around him. They were listening to the word of God. He saw at the water's edge two boats left there by the fishermen who were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, one belonging to Simon, that's Peter, and asked him to put out a little from the shore. The people were crowding around just by creating that little bit of buffer. Jesus used this boat as a speaking platform. And he sat down, what a rabbi would do in the Old Testament. He sat down and he taught the people from the boat. When Jesus had finished speaking, he said to Simon, put out a little into deep water and let down the nets for a catch. Simon answered, Master, we've worked hard all night long but haven't caught anything. Now I want to stop here for just a moment because I want to set up this scene. The people, it says, are crowding around Jesus and they're listening intently. The people that are engaged with Jesus right now are hungry and they are hurting. Can I tell you that I would use those same two words to describe people living in our culture today? In fact, any point in world history, we just see people who are hungry for meaning and hurting from what life has done to them. Hungry and hurting. There's one thing I know for sure. And on Sunday morning when I teach to this room, I see people that look great on the outside. At least most of them look great. Some of them are starting to look kind of... But I look around at people who look so good on the outside, but I guarantee you every single person who gathers in this room and every single person who's listening to this right now is churning on the inside with all kinds of battles and problems and issues. All of us are hungry and hurting. But Peter's different. Simon, this fisherman, he's busy, right? He's distracted. He's got a business to run. He probably has fish to get to market. He didn't have fish to get to market because he didn't catch anything all night long. He's cleaning up his nets. He's probably wanting to go home and go to bed because he's been out working all night long. Peter is busy and distracted. And the first thing that he needs to do is just look up. Jesus, the Messiah, God in flesh, is in his boat, and Peter is too concerned about his daily duties to pay attention. One of the first things all of us need to do right now, regardless of what's going on in your life, the distractions, the disturbances, look up. Look up. Now, there is something really interesting here. Peter, as Jesus says, let's go out for a catch, he says, Master, we've been fishing all night long and haven't caught a thing. So in the Gospel of Luke, and this is not 100%, but this is most of the time it works this way, a stranger would call Jesus teacher. Somebody approaches Jesus, they call him teacher, they're a stranger, they really don't know who Jesus is. If somebody approaches Jesus and they call him master, then they're an acquaintance of Jesus, okay? It's a term of respect. But if a person follows Jesus, if they've committed their lives to following him, they call him Lord. Well, what does Peter say here? He says master. So that tells us he's acquainted with Jesus. By the way, I wonder what word you would really use for Jesus today. Don't give me the churchy answer. Don't give yourself the churchy answer. And you can be in church your whole life and you're still calling him teacher. You're still really a stranger to him. You could still call him master. You know about him. You're acquainted with Jesus. But do you really call him Lord? Look up. Consider that. So it was Charles Schwab at the beginning of the 20th century. He was growing his business, Bethlehem Steel, and he'd kind of reached this critical point of he didn't know how he could fit any more into any given day, and his company was taking on such scale that he just couldn't handle it. So he invited Ivy Lee. Ivy Lee was a productivity guru back in his day, and he said, if you can help me straighten out my life, I will pay you any amount of money within reason if you can just bring order to the chaos of my life. And so Ivy Lee came in and he watched Charles Schwab work, and he kind of oversaw all of this, and then finally he just came back with a recommendation. He says, here's what I want you to do. At the beginning of every day, take out a sheet of paper, write 1, 2, 3, put the top 3 things you want to accomplish that day, and then when you go in the office, when you get to the office, take 1 and don't stop on that till it's done. Then only when you're done with that, go to 2. And then only when you're done with that, go to 3. And he said, it's not even important you get all 3 things done, but if you can just focus on what your key priority is. So Charles Schwab did that, and it revolutionized his company. It grew to a great extent, and he sent Ivy Lee a check for $25,000, which back in the day was equivalent to $250,000. But it's really very simple. And doesn't all of productivity and priority management kind of boil down to that? What are your priorities? Do that first and keep focused on it until it is done. I don't know what's going on in your life right now, but who Jesus is, as God come in the flesh, he is to be the 1 item on our list. In fact, he is the only item every day. Follow me. Look up, see what you're living your life for, and then make him 1. That's what it means to be a Christian. Look up. So this goes on. So Peter does say in 5, Master, we've worked hard all night and we haven't caught anything, but because you say so, we'll let down the nets. When they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break, so they signaled their partners in the other boat to come and help them, and they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, go away from me, Lord. Changes the title that he uses for Jesus. I am a sinful man. For he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish that they had taken. So were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partner. Now, nothing about this passage really makes sense, okay? Jesus is a carpenter, not a fisherman. He's a landlubber, not a sea dog. What Jesus asked Peter to do is to fish during the wrong time of the day, in the heat of the day, rather than in the cool of the night when you would really catch fish in the Sea of Galilee. He also told Simon Peter to go out into deep water, and chances are the kind of nets that Simon Peter was using was a drag net. It would be nets weighted at the bottom, so they'd go all the way to the bottom and they'd drag the bottom and kind of capture the fish. So it was the wrong depth to use that net. There's something that being taught to us here, that when you follow Jesus, not a whole lot of things are going to make sense. In fact, if your Jesus is all predictable, if there's never any surprises, you're probably not following Jesus. Following Jesus means that life becomes unpredictable. But what do? Even in that unpredictable nature of life, of following Jesus, there is balance. Maybe this is the second essential in following Jesus, to look up, pay attention, be aware of what Jesus is doing right in front of you. Don't be busy, don't be distracted. And then to balance on 2 truths. Now, here are 2 things that we need to hold in tension. And we see it here in Simon's interaction with Jesus. The divinity of Jesus and his own dirtiness. He realized that he was in the presence of greatness. He was in the presence of God. But he also realized that he was not where he should have been. You know what? If we can balance on those 2 things, that's living life with a sense of purpose and awe, but also living life with a sense of humility. I love what William Barclay said years ago. He said, Christianity brings with it 2 great revelations. The first is revealing who God is. The second, revealing who we are. To know that God is great and we are sinful, that's a balance in which life can be lived between awe and humility. So there's a little balance test you can do, and I'm going to ask you to be very careful with this, especially if you're older. But if you want to see how good your balance really is, stand on your 2 feet. Put your arms out like this, close your eyes, and lift 1 foot off the ground. And what happens is, when you're very young, you can hardly do this at all, but as you get into your 20s and 30s, it's kind of like a bell curve. You're able to balance better. But then as you get older, your ability to balance fails and fades. And, you know, I'm in my 50s, early 50s. I'm in pretty good health. I was surprised at how little balance I really do have. But here's the deal. As we get older physically, we lose some of that physical balance, but I think as we get older spiritually, we should embrace more and more of that. We begin to understand how frail and fallen we really are. But it's not about my ability. It's not about my perfection. It is about the grace of God and His goodness to use even a person like me. And as we get older, as we follow God, as we follow Jesus more and more, we have that sense of balance that the crazy things can happen in the world around us. And by the way, I know we talk about this a lot. We live in a crazy world right now. But as followers of Jesus, don't you think that none of this should catch us off balance? Don't you think that we understand the frailty of humanity, and we've got over 7 billion of them on the planet right now, and don't you think that we understand the goodness of God, that He's working sometimes in spite of our desire to throw Him out of our world? And that whatever happens, there's this great sense of balance and peace. Look up. Balance. Pedal, pedal, pedal. Jesus said to Simon, "Don't be afraid. From now on, you will fish for people." And so they pulled their boats up to the shore, left everything, and followed Him. When Jesus invited Simon to follow Him, He didn't invite him to sit still. He invited him to move, to follow Him, to gain some momentum in life, to look at Jesus, to have undivided priorities, and just go after Him. Now, here's where I want to have a little fun with this, because Jesus called all kinds of people to follow Him. He asked somebody like Matthew to follow Him. You know what Matthew was? Matthew was an accountant. Accountants like things to be nice and in their place and everything in order. Matthew was probably a very type A type personality. And accountants kind of have this reputation for being somewhat boring. I think that reputation is, yeah, it's mostly deserved. They're boring people. No, I'm just kidding. Do you know the academic color, the official academic color for a degree in accountancy? It is the color drab. But also, accountants can be very creative people. John Pemberton, when he invented Coca-Cola in the 1880s, it was his bookkeeper, his accountant, that scrawled out those words Coca-Cola, that artwork that appears on every can. Sometimes accountants can be incredibly creative and insightful people. Well, that's Matthew. Matthew was a numbers guy. Matthew worked in precision, but that would serve God well as he wrote a gospel that very precisely explains to Jews why Jesus was the Messiah. Jesus also called somebody like Simon the Zealot. Now, a zealot in that day was somebody who not only loved their country, but they idolized their country. They loved their country so much that they hated everyone else who didn't love their country as much as they did. Does that sound familiar by any chance? Simon the Zealot, not only did he love his country, he idolized his country. And Jesus took that kind of passion, a misdirected passion, and moved it toward Him. So you look at all the different kinds of people that Jesus can call. By the way, in any other situation, Simon the Zealot and Matthew might have tried to kill each other. But all those other allegiances fell away as they followed Jesus. There's a man by the name of Steve Sunderman. He collects, and I collect some funny things, but this guy collects barf bags. That's his collection. He lives in Massachusetts, has about 2,000 barf bags that he's collected from all over the world. His is not even the biggest collection. He says, "I'm probably number 10 in the world of collecting barf bags." But his prized possession is a barf bag that he has from the space shuttle. You know, that's a pretty good barf bag to have, right? Jesus collects people, and as odd and as different as we all are, He invites every single one of us, despite our personality, to follow His person. Follow Me. And in this, He gives two little commandments here. Notice this, and if we're not careful, we'll just look right past it. But it says here in verse 10, "Do not be afraid." Could I encourage you to take these words of Jesus and wrap them around you today? Do not be afraid. And we live in such a world of fear right now, but we have an assurance that the world does not have, that God is still in control. He's got the world in His hands, and He's got you as well. Do not be afraid. And then come follow Me. I will make you fishers of people. Implied in these words is you're going to catch people alive and you're going to catch them for life. You're going to have an impact. Again, we can impress people at a distance, but we can only impact people up close. He says, Peter, I want you to give your life to me because you're going to impact more people than you can ever possibly understand. Somebody once said this, Jesus doesn't command us to be ourselves. By the way, I hate that advice. And I'm okay with saying I hate it. Whenever I've gone to some speaking engagements before and I'm talking to the sponsors beforehand and I go, hey, you know, can you give me any insight on how to talk to this crowd? And I go, oh, just be yourself. And I go, that is the worst advice you could possibly ever give me because you have no idea how messed up I really am. Going back to this quote, Jesus doesn't invite us to be ourselves. He invites us to be with him. That's what it means to be a disciple. And what's needed for us is to look up, be aware of what's going on, to balance, to understand God's greatness, our own brokenness, but to live in that moment of grace. And then to pedal. Say, Jesus, I'm going to be with you today. And I'm going to follow you no matter what. You know why we celebrate American Independence on July 4th? It's not because that's when the Declaration of Independence was ratified. Declaration of Independence was actually ratified on July 3rd. But the first person to sign the Declaration of Independence, John Hancock, signed it on the 4th. That's a moment. That's a day of independence because the first person put their name down. Well, here we see in this passage, Peter putting his name down. For him, it's a day of independence. And for you, today can be a day of independence. What is going to require is for you to look up, to get away from all the distractions, say, what is God doing? It's going to take you saying, I need to balance. I understand I'm a broken person, but God is a God of greatness and forgiveness and grace. And then pedal to serve Jesus wherever he invites you to go. I shared a prayer for our church this week on my midweek update, and I shared it with our staff and with our deacons and with Added Dimension this week, and I want to share it with you. It's a very appropriate prayer to pray in these days, and it's out of Isaiah 42, verse 16. By the way, you may want to just jot that down or look it up right now and mark it. Isaiah is living in a day where people are uncertain. They're in exile, and they wonder, how much longer is this thing going to go on? How much longer till things get back to normal? Does that sound familiar? So God speaks, and he says this, I will lead the blind by ways they have not known. Along unfamiliar paths, I will guide them. I will turn the darkness into light before them, and I will make the rough places smooth underneath their feet. This is what I will do. I will never forsake you. I don't know about you, but that's the kind of God that I want to follow. That sometimes I feel blind, but he's going to lead me by paths that I have not known before. There's going to be some unfamiliar ways that I'm going to walk in life, but he will guide me. As in the Exodus, the darkness will become light and the rough places will come smooth as we walk them. And as we walk them with Jesus Christ. His invitation to Peter is the same invitation I give to you today. Follow me. That's what Jesus says. Father, for any person who hears this and they are not your follower yet, they've never said yes to your lordship, I pray that they would look up, that they would find that balance, that they would see their own dirtiness, but they would see your divinity. And if they had pedal, they'd get to work serving you right now. Thank you that you do not ask us to be ourselves, because that hasn't worked. But you invite us to be with you. May we follow you with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength. Now, may the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you. And may God grant you peace, now and forever. Amen.
Thanks so much for listening to our weekly message podcast. At the end of each worship service on Sunday morning, I offer a simple blessing, and I offer that blessing to you today. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face shine upon you, and may God grant you peace, both now and forever. Amen.